Welcome to Brian and Gabe Live for the Michigan-Ohio State Week of 2011. What is today? November 22nd in Omaha. I'm Gabe Knuth, and I got to do the intro today.
Congratulations. In San Francisco, I'm Brian Madden.
And I'm Jack Madden.
Also in San Francisco, and joining us via Chicago, via Skype, we have Nathan Coutinho. So, Nathan, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, and good morning, everyone.
And a lot of you probably know Nathan from Bri Forum. Nathan, you gave a session at Bri Forum, was it one time or twice, about Microsoft licensing for desktop virtualization, right?
Right. It was actually not 2011, but I did in 2009 and 2010.
And now, does this mean that you are sort of typecast with the stink of being a Microsoft virtualization licensing expert?
You know, not exactly, but, you know, it's a very important topic. So I cover it, and I try to cover it in a way that makes sense to everyone, because I realize it means a lot of different things to different people, especially with the variety of ways you can do this, right? So I don't think people get angry with me, but they definitely have a lot of great questions. So hopefully we can replicate that today as well.
And to be clear, so you work for CDW. You don't work for Microsoft. This is just your hobby, if you will.
Kind of sad, I know. So I do work for CDW. This is actually a smaller part of my overall role at CDW. I actually have several teams that cover cloud and virtualization, obviously client virtualization. And about 6 years ago, we started getting knee-deep in Microsoft licensing, because we had to. It wasn't a choice. We obviously have large licensing teams at CDW today that we actually rely on. I rely on them because they know this stuff inside out. But for us to make sense of it as to how it applies to products and to individual customers, that's kind of where we come in.
So is there, to kind of set this show up, Gabe, I guess you and Nathan had some conversations a few weeks ago about licensing, and that sort of led us to the idea of having a show.
Yeah, you know, so what started all of this was a conversation that I think we actually talked about before, where actually when we wrote the articles that Jack had with ClearCube about licensing thin clients in a way that was cheaper than buying VDA. And so that prompted me to call Nathan and say, okay, you know, how the hell can they do this? At the same time, though, and we don't normally talk about our editorial schedule. It was like Monday you put up an article about how to use Windows Server 2008 on Data Center as a cheap VDI. Isn't that something like that, right? And then the very next day is when I follow up with if you can use SA for thin clients by buying a Windows license and throwing it in a drawer. So, you know, we had licensing week unintentionally a few weeks ago. And so Nathan's information helped out correct something on your article. It helped me write stuff for mine, but apparently I still didn't get it all right. And honestly, when I called him, we had such a good conversation, and we got about 10,000 views between those two articles. And we just thought, why not? Let's bring him on the show and see if we can make a show of it, and maybe even take a call or two.
Oh yeah, so we have two firsts for this week's show. The first thing is that we actually have a telephone hooked up, and it doesn't. We don't have a switchboard or anything like that. We literally have a phone plugged into the mixer, so you are able to call in. I don't actually have the number in front of me, but we're not going to – you have to call in, and if it's busy, then call back, I guess.
716-245-4838.
Yeah, can someone write that down and post it somewhere? the other thing we have first is we actually have commercials this week. So Citrix Online with GoToManage is sponsoring today's show, and they're not sponsoring this topic per se. They're just they just have sort of the commercials for this week. So thank you, Citrix Online, for making this happen. So in the context of licensing, and we do have some other things to talk about today besides Microsoft licensing, but can I kick it off? Because the first thing, I guess, that I'm confused on is when I wrote that article a few weeks ago, you know, I was writing about VECD, and someone said, hey, VECD is gone. That should be called VDA now. But I wasn't sure, like, isn't, because I know that if you have software assurance, you don't need to buy VECD as a separate add-on, but isn't it just that the VECD license is included in software assurance, or is it true that VECD is just gone now?
So it's actually really straightforward. So basically, they renamed VECD. So it used to be called VECD. I think they introduced it in 08 or 09, and then I think late 09 they changed it to VDA. So basically, that's just a naming change. However, when they made the naming change, they added VDA as a benefit to SA. So if you had VECD like in 2008, you would still have the SA. Basically, it gets converted to VDA, and you just still have the same benefits. But the whole VECD and the VDA thing is just a naming change. But along with that naming change, what they did is they added that benefit. So now if you have software assurance in your desktop, you can now access a virtual machine that's hosted somewhere running Windows at no additional cost. That's the big benefit that got added to software assurance.
So was VDA originally for like devices that couldn't run Windows locally, or I'm confusing that with something else altogether?
No, you're right. So basically, the whole concept is if you have a device that cannot run Windows, but basically you're going to go out and access a virtual desktop, or if you have a device that does not have software assurance, and it doesn't make sense in this instance for you to actually buy software assurance, because you would have to buy the upgrade and then buy software assurance. So it may be out of your price range for that particular scenario. But if that's the case, then you could just get VDA or what it used to be called VECD for that device, and then be able to, access Windows virtually somewhere else.
And what about, and maybe I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but, when Jack was doing that article, he was talking to ClearCube, I think, and they were talking about there's this license that was, a certificate of authenticity. How's that work? Like, ClearCube gave you a certificate of authenticity for the devices, and then you could have...
Yeah, on the thin client device.
So... But the thin client didn't actually run Windows. It was a thin client to a Blade PC.
Right. It was a Xero client, actually.
So Nathan, do you know anything about this? A Xero client with a certificate of authenticity. What's the story there?
Okay. So So this is a good. It's a really good topic because it's starting to come up more, especially after you guys blogged about it. So thanks for blogging about it.
Thanks for reading that, Jack.
So the COA or COA, as it's known, has been around forever. You think about your desktops back, probably even down to maybe even before Windows 95, when you shipped it from a manufacturer, from a gateway or whoever, it would ship and you'd have this little nice hologram type label on the side of your machine. It told you what your license key was and that it was authentically running Windows 95 or whatever, right? So the COA has been around for a long time. Primarily, the reason why the COAs exist is for OEMs to basically be able to bundle Windows with a hardware device. That's the whole reason why it's there. So it's been around for a long time. Now, OEMs or system builders have the option to obviously get a discounted rate for Windows and sell it with the hardware. Now, where this gets a little gray is sometimes you can go online and buy COAs naked, basically making a promise that you are going to add it to hardware you're buying, which doesn't have an operating system. So I think that comes into a little gray area as to whether that should be done or shouldn't be done. I think for the most part, I think it's left a little bit open, but in general, COAs are really to be purchased typically while it's already pre-installed on hardware. Now, when you think about thin clients, you're actually buying brand new hardware. So technically, you should be able to bundle COAs with a thin client. But here's the catch, though. The catch is that thin client should be able to natively run Windows. In other words, if it can run, if you could, for example, you buy a Xero client, which has nothing in it, you hook up a solid-state drive or drive to it via USB, and if you can run Windows, utilizing its processor and its memory, and it can run in memory, then that's technically a device or an endpoint that can run full-blown Windows 7 or Windows XP or whatever, right, or Windows 8 for that matter. At that point, that to me signifies that it's actually a compliant way to buy a COA and then slap it on the Xero client. Now, luckily, most Xero clients can actually do that because you can stream it with Provisioning Server or HP Image Manager or one of those streaming type options where it runs locally. That would be an actual, normal use for it. But you really don't see too many of those clients out there. I know HP has a couple, Weiss has a couple, ClearCube has a bunch of them now too. You're seeing a lot of them, but you really don't typically see COAs purchased with it because guess what? When you buy the COA, you still have to then enroll in software assurance to be able to get that VDA benefit. So just by buying the thin client by default with the COA, it doesn't really give you access to VDA. All it gives you is the access to run Windows locally.
Does it give you a cheaper path to SA if you have buy the COA, then add SA versus just paying for SA outright?
In the long run, it does, and that's what Gabe's article talked about.
That's
right?
That graph that Gabe cheaper. Made with the two right. The two formulas.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it is a little cheaper. You know,
it can
it's
be
kind of
quite a bit, right? I mean, it just depends on what you pay to get the license in the first place,
and also
because the percentage that you paid to renew is based on the price you paid in the beginning, right?
Right. Right.
And also, ClearCube told me that it is around about the 2 year mark that it becomes cheaper. So, not at first, definitely.
Yeah. The graph showed that.
So on from a list price perspective, at the highest possible price perspective, which is typically retail, right? Yes, it is cheaper. There's no doubt about it. But I think when you get to a medium-sized business or just a larger organization that has thousands of desktops, right, they have different pricing levels, right? Everyone is a little bit different depending on how much they buy. So that number, that price will go up and down depending on how they do it. And sometimes it might be cheaper for them to do SA on the actual physical device. Sometimes it might be cheaper for them to just do VDA. So this is where this gets really tricky. I think for the most, you know, if that's why I usually baseline everything at the retail price, because that kind of gives you an idea. And that's what Gabe's article is talking about, which is absolutely true, right? If you buy a product and you put SA on it, it makes complete sense. And in the long run, VDA does turn out to be more expensive, right, in that particular scenario. But that's not really reality. I mean, from what we've seen with our customers, everyone seems to be at a different pricing tier. So it really depends on your volume, unfortunately.
And you can't just go buy any license off the street either, right? Because this is this is something. I wrote in here one thing, And when we hopped on this morning, you were like, "Yeah, that's there's something that wasn't right." And we said, "Save it for the show." So what what did I screw up on?
All right. So there's this big misconception that retail, you can go buy a retail product and you can add SA to it, which is that's not the reason why retail exists, right? Software assurance is a business benefit for adding long term viability of keeping Windows and Office products in your environment. So let me just say this. Just stay away from retail licensing, right? If you're trying to do VDI or anything else in a business type environment, for testing it's one thing, but if you're trying to actually do this in production, just stay away from retail pricing. It's really not been developed to do VDI. That's not the reason why it exists. It exists for small businesses. It exists for people to put an upgrade to Windows on their home PC and they just don't have a copy of Windows, so they buy the upgrade to Windows 7. It's really not meant to be run in a virtual machine, because once you start doing stuff like that, you're going to start having to activate every single license manually, which is really, really painful. And ultimately, that's what SA does. It lets you, do activation servers of your own and things like that. It's just not a viable case. So I'd say my advice to anyone who's trying to go down this path is just avoid retail licenses. It's not what it's what it's there for. And at the end of the day, you can't really add software assurance to a retail product. That's just not, what it's supposed to do.
So is this whole conversation, do you think, in large part sort of moot in the context of, companies buy SA, that gives them all the rights they need for desktop virtualization and done. And maybe it's just that people like me and Gabe, who don't actually have any users, are making all these big deals of these little, nuanced loopholes and everything. But the reality is people are like, yeah, we just buy SA, so it's done.
So here's the problem with that, though. I mean, you would think that, right, everyone has software assurance. The reality is, in the larger worldwide market share, and this is a number I saw, I think, last year, I think about 30 to 40% of the worldwide desktop market buys SA, which is kind of low for this kind of purpose, right? I mean, it's a big number, but, it's a lot of people that just don't have it. So that becomes a problem. That's problem number one. Problem number two is a lot of people that have SA, they want to go to a thin client. They don't want to keep using their physical PC. They want to go to a more greener 10-watt thin client, right, which makes more sense from a security perspective, blah, 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 all the benefits of thin clients. But now they're kind of stuck because they have SA, and they really don't want to – you can't really move the SA, right? You can't really move it. You can actually temporarily, but for the longer-term thing, at some point they're going to have to go buy VDA if they're going to get rid of their physical device that runs OEM Windows. So for the majority of what we've seen in the market, people are buying VDA. I mean, that just seems like it's the norm now, where everyone is doing it. If you know, if they have a need for virtual desktops and they're going to do this in a big way, they're basically doing a 2 or 3 year contract with Microsoft, depending on the licensing mechanism, and they're purchasing VDA for every single endpoint. So that's, you know, unfortunately, that's just the, you know, I was actually very surprised when I saw that. I thought the SA population would be higher, but it's actually fairly low.
So that's really, yeah, that is the opposite. Because I would think, and how does it work at like big companies? Or maybe this is, I guess it depends on how you define it, but there's still nothing with Microsoft where if you have like 5,000 users, you're just like, guys, just come on. I got 5,000 users. I want to use Windows. Just how much do I pay? It's still not that simple, even at big companies.
No, it's something that you can negotiate on a larger scale, and that's definitely someone does on an annual basis with their Microsoft licensing rep, but it literally is all over the board, and it also depends on, you know, how big of a Microsoft customer are you? Are you using the entire System Center stack? Are you using the entire, you know, Windows stack?
I mean, we've heard of Microsoft looking the other way. You know, like, all right, fine, you guys are good. You give us enough money somewhere else.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think that happens. I mean,
I've never officially heard of it, but
I've heard of that myself, quite honestly, Brian. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's, I guess it's possible. I just haven't seen it myself. I've heard of it, I just haven't seen it. So I think the reality is, especially now that they have a licensing mechanism, I think it would have been possible in 2008 before VECD came out, because, you know, back then we didn't know how to license this, right? We were all struggling with how to actually do this correctly, because even Microsoft didn't have an official stance on it. So I can see it in that kind of scenario, but in today's scenario where it's properly defined and it's really clear cut as to what you need when, at least I tend to think so. It's simple, but I know it's not, right? How you interpret it. I just don't see that as a reality anymore.
So do you think, going back to this thing about you can only use SA if the device is physically capable of running Windows, and Nathan, I think you did a good job of describing exactly what that meant, right? Like, even if it could run Windows in memory and doesn't have to have a disk drive necessarily.
Right.
But what about Windows 8 with ARM architectures? Because there's a lot of thin clients. Do you think there's a lot of thin clients out there that have ARM processors that once Windows 8 comes out, like, technically they could run Windows, even though you would never do that, but that means you can use SA instead of VDA?
Yeah, that's a good point. Someone actually brought that up in one of, I think in Gabe's blog, actually.
I bet it was Brian.
Oh, was it? Well, someone brought it up because I read it. I'm like, you know, that's actually a very interesting point, because you're right. Or he was right, rather. When ARM comes out, that's going to change the landscape a little bit in terms of how that happens. So I don't know. I think we'll see probably either a licensing change or an acceptance, as in, you know, now obviously you can do it with that as well. It just has to be easy, though. I think that the challenge with all of this is that there's so many ways to slice this. And, you know, our customers want an easy way to do it. They don't want to, you know, sit down and read like 3,000 pages of EULAs and stuff like that. They just want a simple way, surefire way to order product, get it out there so you can continue doing this project, as opposed to, like, you know, going back every 5 days and saying, hey, did we do it right? Or is it accurate? Or, you know, doing shortcuts and stuff like that. And it's interesting because, you know, I know Brian mentioned earlier, or at least in his blog, about the whole Windows desktop on Windows Server. And I know people have tried to do that in the past, and they've gotten burned really badly trying to do something like that. And those are the shortcuts where, frankly, I mean, there's only so many ways at this point. I know there's lots of ways you can think about doing it, but there's only one or two right ways to do this,
so,
and whether we like it or not.
Let's, on that note, let's take a quick break, and I want to come back to the SPLA licensing and using Windows Server licenses for desktops and everything like that.
Sure.
But at 20 minutes past the hour, I want to read our first commercial. So, like I said, that today's show is sort of commercialed by, sponsored by Citrix Online with their Go to Manage products. And so what Citrix, you know, they kind of gave the message that we'll sort of read as their commercial. And they just basically want to communicate that, you know, desktop virtualization, while there's a lot of benefits of that, there's no free pass to desktop management. So if you're doing desktop virtualization, you still need to manage those desktops. You still need remote support products. And that's where Citrix Online with Citrix Go to Manage can help. So it's cloud-based IT services tool. Best-in-class remote support, network monitoring, alerting capabilities, giving IT professionals total control of their IT world. So instant delivery of live support to customers. You can access unattended computers and servers, monitor the performance of desktop servers and networks, stay on top of issues, proactive alerts. And now there's this Go Mobile, which is accessed from the iPad. And Citrix GoToManage has, they've got a special 45-day free trial for listeners of the show. So if you go to gotomanage.com, click on the free trial button, and then enter the promo code Madden45, which is cool. Sounds like Colt 45. So with Madden45, that gives you desktop management, tech support monitoring, easy way, 45 days of free trial. So thank you, Citrix Online, for the support of this show. So now back to the conversation we're having with Nathan Cotino from Chicago. We're talking about Microsoft licensing and specifically how it applies to desktop virtualization environments. And before the break, you were just starting to talk about some of these tricks, like using server licenses instead of, you know, desktop VDA type licenses. And from my standpoint, you know, I'm an old school kind of terminal server guy. And so I sort of say, yeah, you know, you can avoid all of this hassle of what, you know, was VECD, now VDA and SA and all that kind of stuff. Why don't we just actually run servers? And especially, I mean, I can buy a copy of data center server and just give the users, still give them a one-to-one user environment and turn on all the desktop experience and everything. So I'm basically delivering data center hosted VDI, but with a server OS instead of a client OS. And doesn't that just allow me to skip all this crap in the first place? And isn't that easier?
So this is a really interesting conversation. I've had this ever since Data Center came out. I think it was November of 2006 when they announced Data Center Edition licensing, like the per proc licensing for unlimited VMs. And this has been kind of a conversation that comes up once or twice a year with our customers. Ever since then, even though we kind of, you know, so let me kind of get into it. So the whole concept is you can buy a Data Center Edition with Windows Server today. It's a per processor licenses or basically per socket on your.
I think unfortunately we're staring to lose our
right, and then
connection.
You can run unlimited VMs on that server. So if you have a two-way,
Sorry, I think our connection is going not so well at the moment. I don't know if there's anything we can do about that apart from
you know what we can do about that. Nathan can call in.
I can.
You want to hang up on the Skype and call our phone?
Yeah, it's the same number, right?
Yeah, the number on the screen.
Yep, I'm
so,
dialing right
so
now.
So no one else call.
Well, they can, Nathan, can they?
No, we'll have to put Nathan on hold to take a call.
Oh, man.
So, tap dance.
Yeah, I like that, though. He's like, all right, well, let me get into this. He also said, you know, he's like, well, about twice a year, you know, our customers start talking about this. And I'm just thinking, yeah, that's great. That's because of, you know, me doing it from this blog.
Right.
So there, Nathan, you're back, yeah?
I am back via traditional analog line, yes.
Nice. All right. So you were just getting into using server, you know, Data Center Edition instead of VDI licenses.
Yeah, so let me explain that just for those who are not so hot on the server side of licensing. And this is kind of where it started, and I have our interest in licensing, actually. But so Data Center Edition, which is Windows Server 2008 R2 Data Center Edition, that's, you know, the licensing name. It's licensed by socket. So if you have a two-way box, you buy two licenses, which is, you know, for each processor, each socket, rather. And Windows Server 2008 R2 or before or earlier revisions on that physical box as you want. So this is really great from a server virtualization project perspective. In fact, almost all our customers that get into virtualization or in a second phase of virtualization are doing this now because it just is so much more cost effective than trying to buy individual licenses of enterprise or standard or whatever. So the concept came about, it says, wait a minute, instead of buying VDA, why don't I just give everyone a Windows 2008 server to log into, which kind of scares me, quite frankly. So it's one of those things where it's the same desktop, it's the same code base, and I think, Brian, in your article, you said, you know what, you can get themes that make your Windows 2008 R2 server look like a Windows 7 desktop. I mean, it is the same code base, technically, right? And it can be done, right? It can be done. The question is it really the optimal way to do this? And I think not, and a lot of our engineers think not as well, because you start running into weird things, not only from a licensing perspective, it gets a little dicey, because, you know, Brian, you mentioned this. You can't just buy the processor licenses. If you have someone connecting in remotely, you still have to have an RDS Cal for everyone. So that's actually accurate, right? Because you're not administering the server from an IT perspective. You're actually using it as a full-fledged desktop.
But now where did that...
So
that
now
wasn't,
you're adding...
I'm sorry to interrupt. That was not always the case, though, right? Like back when I had, you know, Windows...
I don't think so. In fact, I don't know when that got added in. But to me, logically, it sort of makes sense because technically that's not really the use case for Data Center Edition. So I'm not saying this is the right way or the wrong way to do things, and I'm not endorsing that this is the right way to do it. But, you know, from my standpoint, if I were Microsoft and I created this product and someone's using it for the reason why it's not really been licensed for, obviously, you know, that's the reason why VDA exists. So
we've been doing that with Microsoft products for 15 years.
I know.
Using them in ways they're not licensed for.
Right. So, I mean, I guess my point being is, one, yes, it can be done. You do need extra licensing for it from an RDS Cal perspective per user. Is it optimal? I would say no, and here's the reason why. When you start using things like VMware Vue and Citrix Zen Desktop and all the other VDI products, it's looking for a Windows 7 session to run its agent in. It's not really looking for a Windows Server session. And that can get a little dicey from an agent perspective. So in other words, when you talk to one of these vendors who make the actual brokers for VDI, they're not really testing Windows Server. They're testing Windows 7. So that could be one source of contention in the future in terms of problems. Number two, your application ISVs, the guys who write your applications like Office, and Office is not a good example, but just, you know, pick something else out there like Peachtree Accounting or something that's out there, Quicken, I don't know. Those apps are, again, tested on Windows 7 and possibly not even XP anymore, right? Probably Vista and Vista 7 and 8. They're not testing on server.
Oh, but that's the oldest argument in the book against terminal server. Now you sound like VMware telling us why terminal server is bad.
Say that again, Brian. I didn't hear
it. Oh, sorry. So now you sound like VMware telling us that the same reasons why terminal server is bad compared to VDI.
Well, no, I'd never say that. I love terminal server. but I'm just saying
good
that
point, though.
That's what the licensing is designed for. From my perspective, you know, if I want to do VDI, right, I'm going to use the software that it's created for, which would be VDA or Zen Desktop or Vue or whatever that's out there that makes sense for my business or organization. But that's one of the challenges we've seen is that customers have tried to do this, is that they start running into all these compatibility problems. And whether it's right or wrong, you know, it's not really designed for that. So that's a challenge I have, is that it wasn't really designed for that. And I know folks are trying to make it work like that. But you start seeing these other issues start coming up along the way. And long term, I mean, it would be one thing if VMware and Citrix came back and says, okay, this is valid, we're going to do this, and we're going to test everything on server. But they're not doing that yet. You know, at least I don't see them doing that anytime soon. They're doing everything. All their development is focused on Windows 7, Windows 8. So that's kind of the reality I see. And by the way, I don't really see too many people doing this. I have seen a couple, but there really isn't a whole lot of people that's doing that kind of scenario.
Because it is a lot of work. I mean, frankly, it's to save what? You still have to buy an RDS Cal. You have to buy the data center licenses, which are expensive. Then you have to go to all this work to try to reverse engineer and break it all. And I mean, I guess
and then with one EULA change, your life is totally screwed.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yep.
You're skirting the boundaries to support it. What's allowed anyway? So, yeah. So the other sort of giant topic around Windows virtual desktop licensing, and this is not something, Nathan, that's necessarily I'll just say right out. You know, Microsoft does not have a service provider monthly access license for Windows 7, for Windows clients. So they have service provider licenses for Exchange and Server, but there is no monthly access pay-per-use license for Windows clients. First of all, that's true statement, correct?
That's correct. Under SPLA, nothing yet, no.
So,
are you there?
Yeah, and so my question is, do you have any idea why this is? First of all, I know this is you don't work for Microsoft, right? But like, man, what the hell are they thinking?
Well, Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that. I'm actually surprised myself, but I'm guessing this is one of those things that's being worked on, and it's probably more of a contractual thing than anything else. And we know the technology will work, right? But I think it's probably more a contractual thing. And I know you're starting to see a couple providers, like Rackspace as an example, right? So they have a Zen Desktop hosted type facility. So, you know, my guess is that what they're doing at this point, and I haven't actually been able to clarify with those guys yet. We've actually had a call with them a couple of weeks ago. But the thing I want to clarify is, how are they doing the VDA? Are the customers just basically saying, all right, we're going to host everything with you guys. We pay a monthly fee to basically use you guys, you know, as a SaaS provider, kind of, right? And we're just going to take on the VDA ourselves. I mean, you could do that legally. You could actually own the VDA yourself and just access it somewhere else. That's one way to get around it, but you're still paying the VDA, right? There's no way around it.
Yeah,
I guess it doesn't matter. Even if they roll it into SPLA, you're still paying for it. No matter how you look at it, you're still going to pay for it.
Well, and so Flippy the Clown in the chat saying, doesn't Desktone do this? Monthly subscription to a hosted Win7 desktop. Last week, we actually had Desktone CEO Peter McKay on the show, and we asked him this question flat out. And no, with Desktone, it's you bring your own license. So the customer actually owns the VDA. Now, Desktone has set themselves up as a Microsoft reseller. And I believe, and I might be making this part up, but I believe they even have some kind of like installment plan or something, or monthly payment. I forget how they did that exactly for the VDA. So, but at the end of the day, though, you are buying. So you can sign up with Desktone if you wanted to, you know, small environment with no VDA. But when you sign that deal with Desktone, you are buying a Microsoft VDA that you then own. And so if you leave Desktone and decide that they are not the same as, that you don't want to use Desktone, if you quit them, you own that VDA because you bought that.
Yeah, that sounds right, actually. Because if you, I mean, at the end of the day, the customer needs to own it, right? So once you own it, you can put it in your own data center, you can put it into someone else's data center, it doesn't matter. But you're right. I mean, as long as they own the desktop, they own they own the right to use Windows. But if they try to migrate away from them to go to someone else, that's when this gets really tricky, because now they have to actually migrate all those sessions somewhere else before they leave. But the license is still owned by them as long as the contract with VDA, or sorry, contract with Microsoft is valid. And what you're probably talking about is Open Value. I know under Open Value, there is a VDA payment plan with Microsoft. So that's probably what they were talking about in terms of reselling back to the customer.
Right, but it is a payment plan. So it's not like you're renting the license. It's just that you bought the license and you're paying for it month by month.
Well, you can't really own VDA, right? It's long term.
Right.
You know, you have to keep renewing it to keep using it.
Yeah,
you can't, you know, buy it once and.
But
that's
it is
kind
the
of
case.
A little gray area right there.
The payment plan, it's like VDA layaway.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what about, so when I was at VMworld last year, I met a guy, I want to say his name was Mike Chase, and he was representing Din Cloud, which is a startup desktop as a service provider. And he was saying that with Din Cloud, the company behind it, or one of the companies behind it, is some kind of special Microsoft reseller, like there's only 7 in the country or something like this, and they have some kind of way that they can offer the Windows 7 as a service. I don't know if my very half-remembered explanation, Nathan, gives you enough. Like, is there anything else that you know of? So you mentioned there's this sort of installment plan. You mentioned that, you know, the customer ultimately is owning VDA. But there is no SPLA for Win7. There's nothing else you heard of, like special license resellers or anything that can get around these rules.
I haven't heard that, but I mean, let's be frank here. We know that's going to add. It's going to come up in SPLA at some point, right? It's just a matter of time at this point. We just don't know when. So could Microsoft be piloting smaller resellers that's doing this so they can actually get a realistic view as to whether this is going to work or not from a contractual perspective? Sure. I haven't heard that at all about Thin Cloud, by the way. Someone else mentioned this, I think in Gabe's blog, actually, about Microsoft Intune, which actually gives you a, you know, Windows 7 copy with SA again. You know, you're renting it, essentially, right? The challenge with that is I think that's good for probably for small businesses and probably very small, medium-sized businesses. But once you get over a certain hump, you know, you're not going to be able to afford that anymore. So that's the only other thing I can think of from a licensing desktop perspective. But from an SPLA perspective, there's really nothing else out there. Most of our customers who are trying to attempt or attempting to do this or have already done it in smaller capacities have basically bought VDA.
And you know, speaking of,
frankly,
go ahead and finish. Well, I was going to say, go ahead and finish your thought, because mine was a little off the.
Yeah. What I was going to say was, let's be honest, right? I mean, there's a lot of talk versus in the market in terms of who's got, you know, how many desktops deployed and all that kind of good stuff. You know, the reality of that is there's still not a whole lot of large VDI or rather, you know, Windows desktop virtualization kind of deals out there that have been deployed. A lot of customers are still at ground zero, or they're getting done with their first major, you know, rollout of it in phases. So it's really, there's really not a whole lot out there. And what I'll tell you is the ones that are out there and that have been, you know, pretty successful, they've gone the VDA route. So they are doing virtual desktops with either Citrix or VMware, and they've done it by the book, and they're following VDA, and, you know, they're going forward with it. And very few of them out there are actually hosting it somewhere else, mostly from a bandwidth consumption latency issue with the quality of service and stuff like that, right? Because, you know, that always gets really tricky in terms of trying to make sure that experience is awesome. So, I mean, that's what I was just going to say, is that there's really not a whole lot out there. The ones that are out there are very, very tight shops, usually very large shops that are doing this, but they're doing this by the book. You know, they found the economies of scale when they get to a couple thousand desktops, but the rest of them are still, they're still struggling with POCs. So most of them, from what I see, again, they're using VDA, but they're just not, you know, I don't really see too many hosting up there.
You were saying
that... Well, as you can see, you mentioned Intune, and I just wanted to take a real quick kind of unrelated thing. You talked to a lot of customers. Is anybody actually using Intune that you've talked to?
There's a small – from what I understand, and I haven't actually validated with this with our internal teams yet. I have heard it in passing. I mean, there's a strong interest in Intune, but again, it's the smaller business that's going after it. It's really not the lower end of medium-sized businesses and up. So basically, I think the sweet spot's like 50 to 200 users. That's a sweet spot,
okay,
from what we've seen.
I just wondered, everybody I've talked to enterprise-wise, their eyes get wide, and they're like, holy shit, no way am I going to put the management of my desktops in the cloud. Like, no effing way. Like, yeah, that's what I expected, though. So, okay.
How about my other question about... the Microsoft licensing, and I think this applies on the clients for VDA and everything, is that if you're a service provider, you're not allowed to have different customers on the same hardware. So even if I buy my own VDA, like if I buy a monthly desktop from Desktone and a different customer does, Desktone has to have separate physical servers for me. They're not allowed to run VMs of customer A and customer B on the same physical hardware. Is that correct?
I actually can't answer that one, and I can probably find that out for you and probably reblog it out on your site or in the comment or something, but I have not heard that one before. I would be surprised if that one was true.
Oh, so Geese Buell, which I hope I said his name right, is in the chat room, and he actually runs TwoCloud, which is a SPLA. Well, they wish they had SPLA licenses. And he says, no, you're not allowed to have multi-tenancy. For sure.
Really?
So, and this is something he does every day. So,
yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's true also. So I guess we need to go back to Microsoft. You know what? Obviously, Nathan, I wasn't looking for you to explain why that was, since you're not at Microsoft, but when you were kind of talking about SPLA and you said, look, really it's only a matter of time. I was hoping you were going to say it's only a matter of time with that one too. But I guess we need to get someone from Microsoft out there too.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been any announcements yet. I mean, it's possible it'll come soon, but, you know, we don't know how soon it is.
Yeah.
We've got, so Geese is in there, and then Eric, and I can't remember his last name. He's Dutch, I know that.
Westhoven, I think.
Yeah. So either way, both of them are actually running, you know, cloud-based Windows desktop serving solutions right now. And so they are taking over the chat room.
Well, and this goes back to the conversation about, you know, what's better, where should the desktop live? Is it terminal server versus VDI? And, you know, that's a whole different conversation that we've been having that conversation for the past 5 years. And I imagine we're going to have it for the next 5 years.
Let me add this too. I mean, because I know we've been talking pretty much about VDI and possibly that was the main purpose of this whole radio show, right? But I also want to make sure people do know, and, you know, you guys have probably been the best supporters of this, but there's still a lot of terminal services out there. I mean, there's still customers putting it in every day. So, you know, I think the first thing we do with the customer is just try to understand what are they trying to do, right? What are they trying to deliver? Is it really app delivery? Is it presentation delivery? Or is it, you know, desktop delivery? And we build a custom solution for them every single time, and no one is the same. And, you know, I want to reiterate again, there is a lot of terminal services going in today. So it's not a dead technology by any means, I know.
And make no mistake, because the Citrix and VMware both want you to know to think that VMware or that VDI is taking over, and they do that by saying that, you know, VMware says that they've sold, you know, a million VMware View licenses, although, you know, they don't give you numbers of how many are deployed or activated. And then Citrix does the same thing by saying that they have, at the keynote, Mark Templeton said they had 75 customers with more than 10,000 seats of Zen Desktop deployed. And that's absolutely true, but those are 75 customers that took advantage of the trade-up program from Zen App to Zen Desktop, and so they're really still running Zen App. But it's just, you know, the license is called a Zen Desktop license.
Yeah, or it's provisioning services also. Yeah.
Right.
So, Gabe, you're starting to break up a little bit too. So I think that means that next week we're running the show out of my living room. What do you guys want to drive your car into Justin, and we'll load everything into your trunk?
We need more phone lines.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We're actually getting a bandwidth upgrade. Well, you know, I'll talk about the saga, but we're 20 minutes before the hour, and I want to just come back with another commercial break, which I will just read. So today's show is sponsored by Citrix Online, and specifically their GoToManage group. GoToManage, of course, this is the people that we made the online sort of Brian Madden versus Brian Madden video series, which is on YouTube. And if you go to go to YouTube, and I guess it's Google for Brian Madden, and do Google on YouTube? Go to YouTube and search for Brian Madden and GoToManage. And we've got those three short videos which we made, which were really, really fun. But Citrix wants you to know that they've got GoToManage. It's cloud-based IT services and desktop management, but not desktop management, not in the Windows Intune kind of way. It's more about remote supporting users. It's, you know, you can look at performance monitoring, push out software updates. They've got an iPad app now, and if you want to take a look at it, there's a special 45-day trial, which is longer than the regular trial. So you can go to GoToManage.com, and if you use a promo code Madden45, then you get that 45-day trial. And as they say, desktop management, tech support, and monitoring has never been so easy. So that is Citrix Online with their GoToManage product.
I remember playing Madden 45. You know, we had Otto Graham could boot that ball.
Oh, it was Rich. He could. Yes. Was the forward pass invented at that point yet? I don't know.
When the guy's leather helmet popped off.
Yeah, you thought his head fell off. Oh, yeah. Those were the days. So there's a couple other things we want to talk about today. I know some other topics. I don't know if there's anything else on the licensing we want to talk about. Let's see. We've got phone calls. One guy wants to talk to Nathan.
I actually have one thing I want to bring up, too.
Yeah, please.
So home user rights. I know that might be a little bit that's actually a very confusing area for a lot of people. So VDA gives you the right to basically access a virtual desktop, right? So a lot of customers are like, well, you know, I have a desktop at work, and it has VDA on it, either with software assurance or they bought VDA, you know, for that endpoint. You know, I have an iPad and a Mac and another Windows machine at home. Can I access that desktop from all those places? And this comes up a lot, right? So I don't know if you guys get this question, but we get it a lot. And the official answer is, as long as that end user, so say it's Joe Schmo and it's his desktop, you know, at work, and he has a desktop and it has software assurance or VDA on it, the answer is yes, he can actually access his hosted desktop from any device as long as his primary, here's the catch, and this is the verbiage, right, that you have to be really careful with. As long as his primary device is licensed with software assurance /OrVDA. That's the key. By the way, I don't know if you, I don't know if you guys get that question, but I get it a lot.
Yeah, and so the primary device, by the way, and Microsoft doesn't even care sort of what the primary device is. They just care that a user has a primary device. So the basic idea, I guess Microsoft, because their licensing is technically device-based and not user-based, they have to throw something in about this quote-unquote primary device. But really, they're like, well, as long as you have a one-to-one. As long as every user who's out running around has some device with SA or VDA, then yeah, they can connect from home in the hotel and the iPhone and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Awesome. So I don't have to worry about my primary device saying like, well, which one's my primary? Is it the laptop or is it the desktop? And measure percentages or anything. It's just license something and you're okay.
Right, and just to give you like a real-world example, so at CDW, that's what we have, right? So we have access to our apps and our desktops, you know, from a corporate perspective. And, you know, I have my primary endpoint is actually a Mac. It's not a PC. So I know we actually have VDA for my device. Therefore, I can hook up my iPad or, you know, any other device I want to test with, my Mac at home, can all access, you know, in a compliant way, can access that same virtual desktop that's hosted somewhere else and, you know, basically in our data center.
Okay, interesting. You have a Mac, but you have VDA and not SA. But you could have SA, right?
I could if we went through the upgrade, but yeah, it just makes more sense when it doesn't come with Windows to just put VDA on it.
Nathan, we have a question from J.K. Wilson. He asked if they could call in, but we only have one phone line, and Nathan's using it right now.
Take a call.
Yeah, I'm sorry? I don't want to risk that. Justin's saying, hey, we can do a three-way call, but let's I'll just ask this question here. Compliance. So it says, you know, for device-based licenses, you know, they have to certify that devices are licensed when they come in through NetScaler. Have you worked on a compliance solution like this? Pricing is not an issue for a large corporation, but is compliance reporting difficulties in compliance reporting is the pain in the ass. If VDI was per user, it'd be much, much easier. So I don't know if, Nathan, you can talk anything about the compliance reporting. How do we know that users are licensed, or does it fall back within these home use rights? As long as the users who are connecting have at least one primary device that's under VDA or SA, then it shouldn't matter how they connect in.
Yeah, that's I can't really say if I've actually been along a compliance police kind of audit. I haven't, right? I've heard some of the stories around it, you know, just anonymously through customers, but it's a very difficult thing to do, right? I think compliance for almost any product sometimes is just really difficult. I think they're going to look in the system. They're going to look at your Windows 7 activations in terms of how many Windows 7 VMs you've actually lit up. I mean, they can do that, obviously, because if you actually host it locally, then they would come in and look at your licensing server locally. Same thing with VMware viewers and desktop. They're probably going to and see what the active connections are over a period of time. But there really is no easy way to kind of do that. Do I agree that users would be better? Probably. Except for those situations where you have a shop floor and there's like 20 people using the same computer at different shifts during the day. We had this discussion with Zenap for years, right, in terms of terminal services licensing. That's where that would get really weird. So it would be bad for them, but really good for probably the rest of the world in terms of, you know, should we just do VDA by user? But I think at some point we'll have both. I'm surprised we don't yet in terms of having VDA enough for user and per device like we do for RDS gals today. But from a compliance perspective, you know, I would imagine it's the software auditors that are coming in that actually really have to worry about, for the most part, how to get the licensing information back. But I know sometimes I'll go back to the customer and say, hey, it's your responsibility to give us, you know, detailed auditing. And that's when it's very difficult. It's not easy to do.
So this guy in the room is writing.
I guess they don't have a good answer.
Yeah, he's writing. He has to authenticate based on MAC address because that's all he knows how to do. And then he can map back MAC addresses to you know, specific sort of licenses. But I wonder, though, Nathan, if that goes back to what you're saying about the home, is it called the home use rights? I mean, to J.K. Wilson, if all of the users have a primary device, whether it's covered under VDA or SA, there should be some kind of, am I saying this right? Like, there should be like a list somewhere of these are all the users that have a primary device, which is licensed under either VDA or SA. So therefore, those users ought to be able to connect from whatever device they want when they're out running around in the world. And we don't care what device they're on because they do have a primary device that has either SA or VDA.
Right. I mean, as long as you're during the audit, you're identifying that, they should not care how many devices you're connecting from. As long as your primary device has it, right, they're not going to go to someone's home and, like, you know, basically figure out if they've been using their Mac to access to work. or vice versa. You can do that from the data center, obviously, too.
Is this concept of the primary device concept, is that sort of, is there a list or is that enforced anywhere? Like if I buy a bunch of SA licenses and then say, here's all the devices that I'm putting under SA, is there any way for me, does Microsoft provide any tool for me to say, or is this, I have to have my own spreadsheet?
The only thing, I mean, I'm not that familiar with System Center, but I would imagine that there's ways in like System Center and probably some other management tools that you can do an active license count with Windows. But the main thing that gets looked at usually is the actual, either the internal licensing server, or if you're using Microsoft's Activision service to turn these things on with your site license key, basically your multiple activation key. That's the only way to figure out how many licenses of Windows are actually going on and off. And in situations like that, we go back to the Joe Schmo example where he's logging into his machine, he's always typically, at least in that scenario, he's logging into a pool of desktops. You're not going to really add that many desktops, on and on and on, right? It's going to be pretty much the same pool, unless it's in a very volatile environment. That's a different story. But that's the multiple activation server license, or that server that manages, that's usually what people look at typically. Otherwise, there's really no way, unless you've got some third-party software like System Center or, that's actually doing a license scan for Windows. That's why he's bringing it up. This is not really an area that's been completely developed yet.
How about external? Easy to do. What about external contractors? So this guy's saying that these are external contractors with contractor PCs, so there's no primary device for these contractors. So if I want to provide a VDI environment to external contractors, how do I license that?
Yeah, you need VDI.
So who's got?
Basically, what you would do is you'd buy, like, say you had 25 contractors at any given time concurrently throughout the year. You'd buy 25, device licenses for VDA, and that's how you'd report it back to Microsoft.
Okay, so even though
I
don't
still get in and access the desktop, but they would be covered.
And that way, so I can say these are contractors, and I don't know what devices they have, or if their device can run Windows or can't run Windows, but it's not owned by me. So as long as I buy that VDA for each of them, then I'm covered. And
By the way, I haven't actually seen anyone get that granular at an audit to that perspective. I mean, as long as you have the license, you're good to go. And if they find out, like, through the grapevine, you have, these 30 contractors that are accessing a desktop that you hosted, that's when it gets grainy, when you don't have VDA.
Right.
But usually it's not, if you disclose it up front, and this is the kind of the business model that we have, and we've purchased VDA for it, you're good to go.
Because I think VDA, that passes a straight face test. And, you buy VDA and that's, come on, we're trying. We got 25 users connecting about 25 VDAs, and that feels right.
Right.
Is there still the thing about transferring? Like, what if I've got different contractors connecting every day? I guess the VDA I'm buying is for the contractor, air quotes, device. So it doesn't even matter if they're using different people or different devices, because the VDA is covering the device on the, some entities use.
Yeah, as long as it's the same device. That's the key. As long as it's that primary device is not changing actively, I think that's when it starts getting gray. Because there's a whole white paper thing on this on Microsoft's site that talks about, what the roaming rights are and that kind of stuff around home user or remote user or VDA primary user and stuff like that. But as long as, if it's five people that are in shifts, let's just use that as an example. Say the contractor is working on a development project and there's five developers and they access the same physical device to connect back into the corporation to get into the virtual desktop. If they're doing different shifts, yeah, that's fine. One single VDA license for that primary endpoint. Now, if they start logging into from four different thin clients, accessing different desktops at the same time, that's when it gets completely non-compliant.
All right, so
tracking that is also kind of a nightmare. Tracking that is a real nightmare.
But again, it's kind of, as long as you can show that you tried to do the right thing and you believe you're compliant, no one's going to jail for this.
Yep. Right. That's exactly right.
What's crazy here is that we've had a really good conversation. There's been answers to all of these things, and yet I get the sense that probably nobody is really any wiser when we're all done, just because, and not because the talk hasn't been good, but just because it's so damn complex that I can't see how any organization can pick one direction. I think they have to go in several directions in order to make sure they have all their bases covered.
Well, this goes back to I think I mentioned this earlier, is you got to figure out what the right technology is, right? I mean, you can get lost in the sea of licensing, and no matter what module you choose, obviously VDA is probably the most complicated one. But you got to really figure out what's the right fit. And there is a right fit for everyone. It's not you can't just say, oh, VDI is great for everyone, because it's not true. It's just not, right? So once you figure that out, it gets a little bit easier. Because if say you go down the desktop virtualization solution or as a project and you know this is the way you're going to do it going forward, then it's VDA or SA, that's it. There's really no other way to kind of trick that whole thing. I mean, yes, there's this whole concept of the zero client, but I mean, that's not even published on anyone's website. I mean, I know like Clerk have talked about it, and I know Weiss and HP have talked about it as well. But, you know, technically, it's really not an official solution, right? Yes, it could do it. You could cut corners, but now you're going to start running into other issues. So my advice to customers is just, you know, take the easy road. Either do SA on the desktop or do VDA and be done with it. Because in the long run, you know, at least with VDA, it seems like it's easier to transfer licenses and all that kind of good stuff in the long run. That's been our advice all along to customers, is just try to figure out what technology works best first before you kind of go down into a deep dive into the licensing, because either way you're going to have to buy more licensing.
So if you decide that, you know, VDI is right for you, and I absolutely agree, and I need to update my sort of VDI versus terminal server article, because I've got a lot of thoughts, you know, sort of that have evolved since we wrote that originally. But can you leave us, Nathan, with SA versus VDA? So you were saying that not as many people use SA, a lot of them are using VDA instead. So give us the kind of the 30-second version, like why do I want SA versus why do I want VDA?
Okay, sure. So let's start with VDA, because that's the one everyone really knows. So VDA is a subscription-based license. It's about $100 a year. That's list pricing. For each endpoint device. So effectively, if you wanted to do, I don't know, 10 desktops, and you wanted to, you know, use a thin client or a machine, an older PC that doesn't have software assurance on it, you'd basically go buy 10 licenses of VDA, and then you could run a Windows 7 and VMware View or Citrix and Desktop, or, you know, whatever your choice of broker is going to be in Hyperice on the back end. And you can access those desktops, you know, using that manner or using that licensing technology. Now, if you have software assurance on your desktop or your laptop, right, if your primary device is covered under software assurance, you get the benefit of having VDA at no additional charge. So what that means is you don't have to go buy VDA. You basically set up your desktop and point them to the Windows desktop session that's running on your View or Zen desktop or whatever you're using. And you can, you know, from a compliant perspective, you can now access that Windows session at no additional charge. That's the nice thing about SA. The challenge with SA is not everyone has SA, and I think there was a big fallout after XP, because there was that big time period between XP and Vista, and well, let's just say it was a long time frame between XP and Windows 7.
You went by SA that whole time.
Yeah, so a lot of customers bought SA, and they're like, we're not getting any benefit from it. And that's the reason why Microsoft went back and changed a lot of the benefits of SA. So there's lots of new stuff that comes with SA today. In some cases, there's just free software, like VDA as an example, and then there's some training benefit for an SA, but there's a lot of stuff that they get added to it now. So it's not just the ability to get the latest version, right? It's more stuff that comes with it. And it changes by product, so that's something you can definitely pull up on Microsoft's website. But the biggest thing for customers that have SA is now they don't have to worry about, you know, going and buying VDA. Now, the reality is not everyone has SA. So that's just a hard reality, and now you have to kind of go back and figure out, okay, so should I go back and buy SA for all my desktops, or should I just go buy VDA? And a lot of customers are just buying VDA. Because, you know, one, they don't know if they're going, you know, when they're going to go to Windows 8. So do I really get the benefit of, you know, getting the free upgrade to Windows 8? And long term, you know, they're going to mix and match different products in their data center. Like, you know, you guys know this is happening, right? We're seeing more Macs in the enterprise. It's happening more and more. I think Information Week or PC Week or E-Week, someone just had a great article on that. You know, we've seen a surge with our customers. We're using them internally a lot too. And whatever the next version of whatever is, Linux desktop or whatever, right? We're seeing more and more non-Windows devices out there. So our customers are like, well, we need to use Windows for our corporate apps, but, you know, going along that whole bring your own PC realm, like, should we just go ahead and, you know, start doing VDA, because then it gets covered on any device. and we don't have to worry too much about SA, even though I realize that you can put SA on Macs, but you still have to buy the upgrade first. That's the reality.
And so, the summary also is that SA, to cover a device under SA, it has to be able to run Windows locally, but to cover a device, but any device can be VDA, whether it, even if it can run Windows or if it can't, you can put VDA on it.
Yeah, VDA works on anything. It doesn't matter. I mean, technically, you're not really installing Windows on the thin client. I mean, that's not why you're buying VDA. You're buying it because you want to access a, you know, Windows 7 virtual machine that's running. That's the whole purpose why you're running it. But yeah, you're right. From an SA perspective, I guess from a COA perspective, not even SA, from a COA perspective, if you're trying to buy a COA and add it to a, you know, a naked PC or a naked laptop without an OS, which is really hard to find these days, you know, that machine really needs to be able or capable to run Windows. And if it doesn't, it's not really necessarily compliant, but I realize it's a gray area. So again, I go back to, you know, there's enough complexity in VDI in itself without licensing. Try to pick your battles. Just go with the licensing that actually makes sense. And to me, you know, it's going to VDA is probably the best bet long term. But then obviously, if you have SA, that's another option too.
All right, we have come to the end of our hour. It's amazing.
I honestly didn't expect to talk licensing the entire time. Did you?
No, we could probably do another hour, to be honest.
I think so.
So, hey, we're going to have to cut it off. Nathan Coutinho, thank you so much for joining us from Chicago, where you do a lot more than just licensing for CDW, but we appreciate you sharing your licensing expertise with us today.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me.
A couple of quick shout-outs. So on behalf of Gabe and me, I want to say hello to the Desktop Virtualization Drinking Association in Denver, Colorado, where Gabe and I were both their guests this past Wednesday night. And it was a really great night, a lot of great conversations with that group. And happily, there's a lot of conversations that had nothing to do with desktop virtualization. So that was also very cool.
Yeah, you bet. That was a unique meeting. I don't think I've been to one like that.
Next week, we will be back here Tuesday morning at the same time, back here on the same, I guess, website. I don't know if we'll be back here in our office or if we'll be at my apartment until they get our upgraded connection. We're getting 100 megabit connection here in the office, so that's really cool.
I'll believe it when I hear it.
Our guest next week is going to be Chetan Vanderkesh, and he is the CTO, founder of Atlantis Computing. But Chetan and I have sparred back and forth, had Bryform sessions together, talked about future desktop and everything. So he'll sort of just be our guest of the week, and we'll sort of have more conversations about the industry. And we're looking forward to that. He's local here in San Francisco, so we can make him come over to my apartment or the office, wherever we end up. So with that, though, in the U.S., we've got our Thanksgiving holiday here, so it's not really work day. Really getting in tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, no one's going to be doing anything here. So we will see you all back on Monday. Big football game this weekend, Ohio State, Michigan. I can just say, go Bucks.
Oh, hey!
I-O! And Gabe, actually, thank you for that. Backing away from the microphone for that. I did not do that. To all who joined, Nathan, thank you, Citrix Online, for sponsoring the show today. We'll be back here next week. Enjoy your long weekend. Thank you so much.